Quota. Okay, very good. This is the principle of Ishavasyam. What, something else? Do you remember? Somebody remembers the argument against the Maivad philosophy from the Om Purnamada Purnam Idam shloka that Prabhupada gives? Krishna Premarupabhu? Yeah, he would be less than his creation. So since this creation is coming from him, he cannot be less than the creation. So we have form, we are a person, so that's why he should also be, means logically he must be a person. There is another point also that similar to this, but also Prabhupada mentions in the first, in the invocation to prove. Yes? We are incomplete because we are separated from him. But also he speaks about Sat-Chit, Ananda and Vigraha, that Krishna is the complete form. So there is Brahman, which is the impersonal effulgence. So this is the Sat aspect, eternity aspect. Then there is Sat-Chit aspect, which is Paramatma. But only Krishna or Bhagavan aspect is Sat-Chit and Ananda, because there are relationships. So again, it's an argument for Krishna's personality. All right. So, okay. What did we hear in the second mantra? What does the second mantra say? Anybody remembers?
You know the second verse or like the second mantra?
Second mantra.
The first verse of the second, after the invocation.
So the third verse or second mantra. Kurvani veha karmani rijibisha chatam sama evam tvaya na teto sti. That's the third one. That's what we probably will study today. The second one is the mantra which speaks about something that may seem different from the first mantra. Upanishads usually speak in paradoxes or in contradictions. And truths, as we discussed, truth is usually a paradox. Truth is usually explained in paradoxes. So we had, this is the first mantra. That Krishna is Ishavasyam, so he is the controller and enjoyer of everything, and we should tyaktena, we should give everything to him. So what is the idea that we usually get when we hear this? That you should give everything to Krishna?
That means we're not allowed to enjoy, so we should give up everything. And misunderstanding that we should not do anything.
Yeah, misunderstanding is I should not do anything.
The next slogan is saying that we should work.
Yeah, we should work.
But detachment.
With detachment, yeah.
Then our karma becomes
a karma, so free from reaction. Yeah. So this is the usual idea when we learn about spiritual life or become interested in spiritual life, we think that I should stop doing anything. Yes. It's all pervading, this idea. But this is in fact the same mentality as the enjoying mentality, because I still think that work is meant for enjoyment. So if I give up enjoyment, that means why work, you know? So in my mind, work is connected with my personal enjoyment. So that's why if I'm giving up my personal enjoyment of fruits, then naturally, you know, why work? So this shows that I still take any activity or work as material, as meant for my enjoyment. But work is meant as service for Krishna. It's not meant for our enjoyment. So that's spiritual understanding of work or duties. And that's what Krishna describes in the Bhagavad Gita, and why he always stresses that, yes, work with detachment, tyaktena, be detached, but the third verse here, or Kurvan, sorry, this next verse, this was mantra one. Yes. And mantra two speaks that still you should work. Yeah. So be detached, but work. And then you can desire to live for 100 years. And now, what happens if we don't do what's described here in the first and in the second verse? That's mentioned in the third mantra.
We are addicted to karma.
Pardon?
We are addicted to karma.
We are addicted to karma, and yes. And let's chant together mantra 3. Asurya namate loka andhena tamasa vrita tanste vritya bigacchanti yekechat mahanojana. The killer of the soul, whoever he may be, must enter into the planets known as the worlds of the faithless, full of darkness and ignorance. So if we don't accept the suggestions of the first two mantras, then we become the killer of the soul. Even though the person is alive, it's like he's dead. The person's life is no better than being dead. And this is also what we often see in the lives of conditioned souls, that they are acting as zombies or as robots or as programmed. That's the meaning of condition. Condition means programmed. So they don't have their own life. They just have some program that they are programmed from the senses, programmed for the mind, and they just blindly follow their, it's called one-eyed guru. You know, the one-eyed guru? TV, the one-eyed guru, that every day there is a program in hypnosis sessions where people are hypnotized. Okay. Buy this product, use this washing powder, use this car, sell that, buy that. And people are just following that. So they're like that. They're like that. So that's why if a person does not pursue spiritual path, they are the killer of the soul. There are different kinds of killers of the soul. One kind of killer of a soul, Prabhupada mentions, is someone who wants to commit a spiritual suicide. What's a spiritual suicide? Maya, when one wants to merge with the Lord, so stop being a person, stop being a separate person. So that's also killing the soul. And the other kind is when we don't do anything spiritual. Also, Vedanta Dashika quotes Taittiriya Upanishad, which says that the person thinks that spirit does not exist, the absolute truth does not exist, then the absolute truth thinks this person does not exist. So, because this person is just rotating in the material world, and it's very funny. I remember when I was in the school, I started studying philosophy, and I remember I was dividing people into live and dead. And most people were coming out like dead, but some people were alive. So I kind of, was talking with people and seeing if they, are they alive or are they dead? And very many people were just completely bereft of any thought, independent thought, independent awareness, what they are doing, what is their goal in life, why they are doing that. So this reminded me when I read these commentaries about killing the soul, or being dead, living and being dead. So if someone does not pursue the spiritual life, then what is the result? Dark worlds and covered with ignorance, and asurya. What means asura?
It's basically demoniac.
demoniac, yes. Demoniac. And Madhvacharya gives an interesting explanation of this asura. He says, a means not, su, you all know, is nice, and ra is ranjana, or like rama, so pleasure. So those whose pleasures are not nice. A, su, ranjana. Those whose pleasure are not nice. So, you know, there are nightclubs, and there's nightlife, and there are all kinds of, you know, pleasures, demonic pleasures that are not nice, based on killing others, eating others, and things like this, torturing others. So this is not nice. And if people do that, then certainly they get the same result. So Prabhupada begins his purport by saying, human life is distinguished from animal life due to its heavy responsibilities. Heavy responsibilities. And those who are neglectful of these responsibilities or who have no information of them are called asuras, demons. So a divine person or demigods or godly person, suras, they are responsible. They take responsibility. And an irresponsible person tries to avoid responsibility. It's very interesting. You can see in the history, like there was in Nazi Germany, there was Himmler, and there were several other people who were executed. There was this Kaltenbrunner, and there was Zeucher, I think. Yes, the one who created the system with the concentration camp. I think Goering, he survived. He was.
Hanged. He was actually
escaped because he took poison. Yeah. So you can. It was amazing how many of them. They said, "I'm innocent. I didn't do anything." I think it was Zeucher who created the concentration camp system. So he said, "I'm innocent. I didn't do anything." Al Capone in Chicago, by whose order hundreds of people were killed and thousands were robbed. When he was put on trial, he said, "I'm a good person. I just tried to help some friends. Why are you so after me? What do you have against me? I'm a good person." A demon is totally convinced that he is innocent. It's amazing. Also, you can see Kamsa when he when Krishna takes birth, he's taken to from Mathura to Vrindavan, and Yogamaya is brought from Vrindavan to Mathura, and he comes and he grabs a small baby, just, you know, not even one day old baby, by the feet and tries to smash her head on the stone, and she slips after killing six previous children. And she slips out from his hand and she manifests herself in the sky as Durga. And she says, "You idiot, the person who is going to kill you is already in another place. He's already born and he's in another place." And she manifests her form as Durga with all the weapons and the goddess of material world. And this is what he worships. So he becomes scared. And what does he say to Vasudev? He says, "Oh, please forgive me." He becomes afraid. Yes, he was his whole life. He's afraid. So he says, "Please forgive me. But all we do is just karma. So Vasudeva, what happened to you was your karma. I killed your children, but this is your karma, and I'm just, you know, forced by also my karma. So I'm innocent." Kamsa. That's the demonic philosophy. They can use philosophy, they can use karma, they can use everything to avoid responsibility. Yes? Or Dhritarashtra, father of Duryodhana, Akrura came and told him everything. "What do you do? You're leading to destruction of the dynasty. You should." The mother of Duryodhana told him. All the sages told him, "Give up Duryodhana. Just give up this one. The other 100 or 99 will be okay. It's only because of this one that they are being influenced. He's so demonic. When he was born, so many bad omens were there. Some donkeys brayed, very loudly, something broke in the palace, something, you know, it was many bad omens. So even his mother, even Gandhari said, okay, give him up. But Dhritarashtra said, well, I cannot give him up. If that is Krishna's desire, if that is God's desire, then what can I do? I am just an instrument. I am helpless. I cannot do anything. So, sorry. I know I'm too attached, but I cannot do anything. It's just fate. It is fate. So this is the demonic philosophy. Whereas, and it's a pleasing philosophy. Yes, it's a good excuse for anything you do. Whereas, a devotee's philosophy is responsibility, and it may be painful. Responsibility is usually painful, because when Kamsa told Vasudev that it's your karma, Vasudev said, "Yeah, you're correct. It's my karma." It's painful. Yeah, it's obviously he was treated unfairly, but he accepts. Yes, this is my reason. This is my problem. It's my guilt. It's a result of my choices. So he takes responsibility. So a godly person's life may be more troublesome on some inner platform, because he has to take responsibility and see where the godly person sees where my choices has led me to this. Whereas nowadays the popular philosophy is the victim philosophy. Yes, I'm just a victim. I'm a victim of circumstances, victim of society, victim of education, of upbringing. So I have no choice. Childhood abuse or whatever, so I have no choice. So responsibility, this is the very important point of mantra 3. So mantra 3 speaks about responsibility. And this is a very liberating philosophy, because responsibility in this seminar, Six Principles of Success, that Akrura Prabhu is sometimes giving, I don't know if he spoke about this here, it is based on Stephen Covey's Seven Habits of the Highly Effective People. There, the first thing he speaks about is responsibility. Stephen Covey's version, it's proactivity. It's when when instead of reacting to being a victim, being just a helpless piece of, like a puppet that's influenced by others, I see what I can do and I do it. So this is the spiritual philosophy, that I'm not the body, I'm not the modes, I'm not the product of the modes, I have a choice, I'm a spirit soul, and that means that whatever happens is the result of my choices. So it may be a little painful in the beginning, but if I take responsibility, that means if I, by my choices, have brought myself to this situation, it means I also can change it by changing my choices, by changing my mentality. So it gives me power. It empowers. So the implication of this is I am spirit soul. I'm a spirit soul. And I have choices, and that means I can change something. Any questions or points here? Now, Srila Prabhupada speaks. So this is clear. Yeah, everybody agrees. Prabhupada says, "What happens when we don't take responsibility?" In the next paragraph. So first he speaks about responsibility, then he speaks what happens if we don't take. So he says, this is the third paragraph, there are swine, dogs, camels, asses, etc., whose economic necessities are just as important to them as ours are to us. But the economic problems of these animals are solved only under nasty and unpleasant conditions. Yeah? Pigs eat stool, and dogs bite each other, camels eat, you know, these thorns and whatever. The human being is given all facilities for a comfortable life by the laws of nature, because the human form of life is more important and valuable than animal life. So why, for example, some director of a company has more facilities of than more comfort than a small worker, because he has more responsibilities, right? So that's why he's usually given more facilities. But if he doesn't carry out his responsibilities, then what happens? He's thrown out, he's dragged down. So in the same way, this is what Prabhupada is saying. Why is a highly placed government servant given better facilities than those of an ordinary clerk? The answer is that a highly placed officer has to discharge duties of a higher nature. Similarly, the duties human beings have to perform are higher than those of animals, who are always engaged in simply feeding their hungry stomachs. Yet the modern soul-killing civilization has only increased the problems of the hungry stomach. Basically, all the advertisement is just the expansion of the hungry stomach and the expansion hungry stomach and the need for a soft bed and, you know, for quick movement. It's just for the body, hungry stomach. When we approach a polished animal in the form of a modern civilized man and ask him to take interest in self-realization, he will say that he simply wants to work to satisfy his stomach and that there is no need of self-realization for a hungry man. The laws of nature are so cruel, however, that despite his denunciation of the need for self-realization and his eagerness to work hard to fill his stomach, he is always threatened by unemployment. I have a personal memories connected to this passage. And then on the other hand, if someone just make a small attempt to realize the soul or God, then Prabhupada says, by simply attempting to realize God, one is guaranteed birth in a wealthy or aristocratic family. So, and then you have a good chance for spiritual life. I remember I was distributing books in West Ukraine just after the Soviet Union fell apart, and it was total economical disaster. So there was huge inflation. Russia, usually all the money from the banks were going to Russia, and then at the time of the salary, they were sent from Russia again to the banks in all the separate different republics to be given to the people. But at this particular moment, the money were sent up to Moscow, but they were never sent back. So it was economic collapse. And so we were trying to distribute books. Inflation was galloping. And I remember I went to a factory that was producing some torches, you know, torch lights and some electric things, and just coming there, it was so noisy, and you know, all these mechanic stuff there, and so it was quite depressing. And then I was going to different people, and I saw like one young woman. She was rolling these sheets of metal into the tubes, you know, there are metal torch lights. In India, they're very popular. Metal torchlights where you put the batteries inside. And so she was rolling them, and I saw that she has one finger missing. Because one day she was probably pulled this lever, and she put her finger in the wrong place, and it cut off her finger. And it was totally hellish. It looked hellish. And then when I tried to offer them the books, they said, oh, yeah, nice books. Yeah, good. But, you know, we get, how much do they cost? I told them, it was like 100 coupons they were calling it. It was before the current currency, the present currency. And they said, oh, we are getting 900 in the whole month. So it's very expensive for us. But I think bread costed also something like 100 coupons. So in a whole month of heavy work, they were getting just, you know, enough to buy a few breads. I couldn't believe this. I thought, this is too much. How can they buy? Of course, how can they even live with this money? And they seem to be like honest people, not going out to steal. They are working, even though they are paid like peanuts. Still, they are working, working hard. So when I was going back to the ashram, I was I was disturbed. I was thinking, they seem to be working hard and they are living such miserable lives. How is it? The hellish lives. They're living like in hell. Whereas, then I thought about myself and I thought that for me, I never had a problem like with food or anything. Usually for a devotee, the problem is not to overeat, right? That's usually a devotee's problems. Even anywhere, even in such economic downturns. So when I was going to back to ashram, I would usually read. So I opened one of Prabhupada's books exactly on this place, but in The Science of Self-Realization, Die Schönheit des Selbst, it's a little bit more expanded. So there he says that if a person neglects the responsibility of spiritual life, then even though the person is ready to work like a donkey, here he doesn't say, to work like a donkey to fill the stomach, they are given only scraps, just crumbs. They are working like a donkey and they are getting just crumbs. That immediately struck me. That's exactly what I saw. Living a hellish, working like donkeys, living a hellish life and getting crumbs, just crumbs of bread. And then on the other hand, if someone even tries to, even attempts to do something for self-realization, then in the next life he'll be taken care of. He'll have no problem. So then I immediately realized that what we are doing is the highest welfare work. Because like myself or so many other devotees, I cannot remember when I had a problem with, usually the problem is not to eat too much. It's usually too many things that you have, or too. Krishna is very kind. And all because of what? Just because probably in my last life, I just tried to do a little bit of yoga. I just tried a little bit of something, tried to understand what is soul, what is the absolute truth. And I'm fixed in this life. So the best we can do for these people, or for any people, is to give them this knowledge and inspire them to take responsibility for self-realization. That's the best, and that will solve all the economic problems too, because it all starts with the consciousness. So if the person if the human being carries out his main duties, his main responsibility, then the secondary things with economic development and so on automatically is taken care of. Krishna will automatically fulfill these needs. So, and this is why it's so important to preach and spread the spiritual knowledge. So Prabhupada says, the conclusion is that as human beings, we are meant not simply for solving economic problems on a tottering platform. How can you solve economic problems on the economic platform? It doesn't work. There has to be a culture. There has to be some better consciousness. And then you can solve some problems. Right? Also, even like, for example, here in Switzerland, it's a wealthy country. But is it just on the basis of being organized? Or is it because there is some culture, work ethics? It's also based on some culture and consciousness. And of course, piety. There has been piety, and piety in this life and piety in the past life. And just by enacting some laws, it's not enough. It will not work. You can have perfect laws, but if consciousness is not right, it doesn't work. But for solving all the problems of the material life into which we have been placed by the laws of nature. So that's our purpose, spiritual realization. So we take responsibility, and our main we take responsibility for everything, but of course our main responsibility is spiritual life. So that means also setting goals. That means also carrying them out, achieving these goals. Any questions or points here? Questions or comments? If there is no questions or comments, then I will ask something from you. Now, maybe it will be a painful exercise, but they say no pain, no gain. So try to think of some instance in your life where you were treated unfairly. Try to think of some event or some relationships or something that happened where something did something wrong to you. Can everybody think of something like that? Everybody has something? You can write it down in your book so that you understand some hints. Did you ever? So everybody has something like this? Anybody doesn't have? All right, everybody has. Now, the painful part. Try to think how you can find your own responsibility. How I myself, if I was treated unfairly, how I myself could have contributed to the problem by some wrong choices, wrong actions, or wrong mentality, or something else. Find where is your responsibility. So, of course, this is a big question of justice. How God is just? Is God fair? Why some people have it easier, some people have it more difficult? So is God partial? And all the religions have a big problem dealing with that question. In Christianity, there is a whole discipline called theodicy, justifying God. Why bad things happen to good people? It's called theodicy. Justifying or finding excuse for God. So, still, you know, like for Christianity, for example, how do you explain that a small baby is born already with missing limbs? What did it do? Right? Or that a small child suffers and dies very quickly. Why God allows this? What sins did this little baby do? For them, it's very difficult to deal with that. For us, it's easy because we know about reincarnation. So we know about many lives. And Christianity initially also had reincarnation, but then they kicked it out for political reasons. But a thoughtful Christian may still find something, like when something happens to us and it's unfair. Things may happen unfairly in this life. It's possible. But a thoughtful spiritualist, they will look inside and they will see, okay, maybe I didn't do anything to actually deserve it, but I have a tendency in my heart. I have a sinful inclination. And therefore, this thing happened to correct, to address this bad tendency in me. So sincere spiritualists, they will find it. Even if they don't know about reincarnation and karma. Because usually things happen based on what we did in our past lives, and what we did in our past lives will result in some tendency in this life. I will have something in my heart, some inclination, some mentality in this life, and we can recognize, okay, this is from past life. These other religions, they don't know about past lives, but they can still see the tendency. So they can deal with it. So you can try to find can you write down what happened? Just something so that you can understand. Maybe it's too painful to share, I don't know. And then try to think how you were responsible, how you can find your own responsibility for that. Was there some mentality that led to this? Or maybe you actually did something that could have brought this up. can you take responsibility? Can you see what you can do to avoid such situations? Everybody has found something? Can you find it? Is it something you can share? Is somebody's story something you would not like to share? Does somebody have a story you don't like to share? You would not like to share? You would not like? Huh? You would not like to share. Okay. You would not like to share. Okay. All right. So that's all right. Okay. It's understandable. But did all of you find, did you, all of you manage to find your responsibility? Anybody didn't find your own responsibility? Anybody couldn't find how you could, may have contributed to this problem? So all of us have found, have been able to take responsibility, yes? You were able to find? Reiner? You can find, yeah? Okay, very good. There is one very interesting exercise, or one very interesting observation. Think of some time when you were rejected, or you felt rejected. Rejected, you know. Everybody can think of some case where you were you felt rejected. Now the funny thing, everybody has it. Somebody doesn't have any case where you were maybe some friends or some company or something in the school or. Now the funny thing is that a very deep observation is that you cannot feel rejected unless you also reject. So try to go back to that case where you felt rejected and see, didn't you also reject them? Maybe even before they rejected you? Look inside. Are you rejecting? Did you reject them? Rejecting them. Sometimes even before. I was thinking about these people. Oh, they are bad. And then they rejected me. But I was the first to reject them in my mind. Can you see this? Sometimes before, but sometimes after. Sometimes first they rejected me, and then I thought, oh, they are like this. And then afterwards I reject them. Isn't it? Can you see this? It's always a two-way traffic. It's always from both sides.
At least in thoughts.
At least inside, yes.
Yes? Sometimes also it feels like you are forced to reject. Sometimes you don't.
It's what?
You feel like forced to reject. Forced
to reject. Well, we reject. We usually are rejecting, but how do you mean we are forced? It's usually our choice, isn't it?
Sometimes something comes up, but you can't really control it.
Emotion. Well, all emotions are our choice. This is, we always choose to feel this way or that way. We agree to feel that way or this way. So, this is the topic of responsibility. So, our main point is to take responsibility. Devotee takes responsibility for everything. In fact, we are kept in this material world only until we blame Krishna. So even as devotees, we may still sometimes blame Krishna. Oh, he did it unfairly. He's not fair. He's not gerecht. He's not fair. He's not just. So only because we think like this, that's why we are still in the material world. It's like in that joke that the king comes to the prison and he asks the prisoners, so how did you get here? What is your story? And he said, oh, your majesty, I'm innocent. Please help me to get out. I was put here unjustly. Oh, how terrible. And you? Oh, your majesty, my neighbor bribed the judge, and that's why I am in prison. Oh, terrible. And he asked the third one. And you? He says, oh, your majesty, I did this little mistake, and I'm punished so severely for that little mistake. Terrible. And he asks another one, oh, I'm innocent. Another one, I'm innocent. Another one, and you, how are you here? He says, oh, your majesty, I'm a criminal. I did a crime, and to correct me, I am being punished by being put in prison. So the king says, guards, immediately take this rascal out of here before he contaminates and spoils all the innocent people here. He's the only one who is a criminal, who is guilty. All the others are innocent. So as soon as we admit, as soon as we take responsibility for what happens to us, that it's my action, what I did in past, it's my mentality, then it's the door to liberation is wide open. You stop blaming Krishna, and then Brahmaji says, then Tatteinu kampam susamikshamano bunjana evatma kritam vipakam ridvagva purbir vidadannam aste jivetayo mukti pade sadaya bhag. If a devotee suffers, he says, it's a result of my own actions. Atma kritam vipakam. And he continues worshipping the Lord, and if he acts like this, then his place, his claim for liberation is already confirmed. His place on the plane back to Vaikuntha is booked, is already reserved, already completed. Daivak.
So your example was a joke, right?
Yes. I said it was a joke, didn't I? Yeah, I said it's a joke. Did you miss some words?
I was thinking about one.
Okay. All right. Any questions here?
This relates to personal relationships.
Everything.
It's love.
But rejecting, it's personal relationships. It's also based on pride.
For example, we can feel, in a way, we can feel rejected or unpleased if someone dies.
Well, oftentimes person didn't have much choice about dying. It's rare, you know. Usually, when somebody dies, it's the call you cannot refuse.
was this related to rejection? Like, did you feel rejected by this person dying? Did this person reject you by dying?
He asked for the example.
Feeling rejected.
When we felt rejected. Just.
Do you have some specific example that you feel rejected by a person who died by the fact of?
I just come from a funeral, and I don't want to say I feel rejected, but in a way, what you feel in that situation.
You feel left alone.
I'm just challenging. I'm somehow.
I see. Well, It's not exactly the same. You feel left alone, left behind, not really rejected. And let's take a theoretical example. Let's say, God forbid, let's say our father or mother commits suicide. God forbid, but let's say. So in that case, we can say that yes, they are kind of rejected us. Right? And we feel offended. But when we feel that, what do? We reject them by, we think they are wrong. What they did is incorrect. He doesn't have a choice. That's a bad act, and this is a bad person that he did it. So I'm rejecting them. Isn't it? I cannot accept their choice. I cannot accept them. So I'm also rejecting.
Could be a synonym to rejection, being unwilling to accept.
Yeah. It's a very funny thing. I was struck when I heard this in one lecture. I was shocked. I actually started thinking about different cases, and I found, yeah, that's true. It's both sides. It works both sides. Amazingly enough.